Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I sat down with pianist Hélène Grimaud when she was in town to perform Brahms' second piano concerto with the Philadelphia Orchestra. I first asked her about her approach to Brahms, particularly that piece.
What does the Brahms mean to you? I understand that you were very moved by the first piano concerto. He wrote this 22 years later. What does this particular work mean to you?
This work I've grown to love. It's funny because when I started, it was more a conceptual decision, I thought, with the relationship I have to Johannes Brahms and his music, being that I play nearly everything he's ever written, piano solo and also chamber music. I thought, okay, there's no way that I will not play the second, the B flat. At the same time, it took me a longer time to really come to love it as intensely on a cellular level as I do the D minor. So it's been a longer story of development. It's a wonderful concerto. It's very wise. It has a beautiful quality of sort of philosophical repose, of this looking back onto a life and onto some moments when everything changed and nothing would ever be the same. So it has a particularly poignant quality in many places. It has a beautiful tenderness. It's a very conciliatory piece. It's like a massive chamber music work in a way, which makes it such a different planet from the D minor, which is more like a symphony with piano obbligato in a way. So it's a special joy to interact with the individual musicians of the orchestra and sections in that chamber music spirit.
When you know a piece so well, how does collaborating with an orchestra change your approach? Because you may know it in your head and have played it with other orchestras, but when you come here, it's a different piano, it's a different orchestra, it's a different conductor.
No, you're right. Every factor is weighing heavily in the overall equation. Well, I mean, here it's luxury. I mean, if you come here with some of your favorite partners in the whole world, you welcome whatever changes they might bring. And that's the wonderful thing about this profession, is that this interaction is always dynamic. And every inflection of every phrase is going to change the way you intervene when your turn comes. And of course, especially under the the seal and the influence of Yannick and his incredible musicianship, it's really a great combination.
Well, Brahms is often referred to as pure or absolute music, but you referred to it just now as having something of a program or a narrative or an arc. With music like Brahms, which doesn't have an overt story, is the historical context important? What informs your playing besides the music, or is it just the music?
Well, it's mostly the music, of course, in the first place. That's what I've often said. No matter what amount of biographical information that you study and digest, which, of course, having done it, I'm not going to minimize the role of it. At the same time, I am convinced that the pieces have the keys to their own secrets. And it's a very, very, it happens on a very personal level during those hours where you study the piece, where you get physically involved with it, where you reflect on it, where you think about it, where you play it through your mind, where you listen to it. So this is something which happens on a very, again, personal and subjective level. That said, it's, of course, always anyway interesting. I mean, we're all curious, right? So you always want to know what was happening in the historical context, also what the contemporaries were producing at the time, what was happening in the life of the composer. But it happens on a different level.
Well, it is interesting because I've read that he didn't write another piano concerto for 22 years because he was in some ways suffering from a burden of expectations. People expected him to do magnificent, grand work. And this work is, it's grand, yet it's intimate. It has all different emotions.
Yes, and I think he reached a stage in his life where, he was liberating himself from this weight, something which I think he set out for himself. It's not just outside expectations. I think it has almost more to do with how high we raise the bar for ourselves, and in his case, undoubtedly. And so I think, this is the beautiful thing about this piece, is that it has nothing to prove, and it's not trying to prove anything, and it's all the more magnificent because of it.
And you've talked in the past about your seeing colors when you play music. Does that happen all the time?
It doesn't happen systematically, but I associate tonalities with colors. And it doesn't matter really by which composer. So D minor is always dark blue, C minor is always black, B flat is always yellow, F sharp is always red. So, and of course, with every modulation in the piece, the color will change. But the overall color that dominates the experience is going to be the color corresponding to the tonality in which the piece is written.
So when you say that you see the color, is you actually see the color or you're thinking about the color?
It's a good question. No, mostly I see the color, although sometimes it's more the idea of the color than the color itself.
That's interesting. I've talked to other musicians who also see music in terms of color or describe music in terms of color. Could I ask you a little bit about some of your other activities? You're very involved in all sorts of things. You've written books. You've started the Wolf Conservation Center. You recently did an art installation about water in connection with your CD called Water. Do you see other opportunities for music to promote the other things you care about?
I don't think about it in those terms. I'm, of course, always welcoming the chance, especially when it comes to wolves and environmental conservation or water and the lack of access to safe water, particularly for so many people on this planet. I'm always thankful for the chance to be mentioning it to simply bring more awareness to those issues. But otherwise, no, I don't think about it in that way. And, you know, everything is connected. And I think we talked about that in the past together about this, you know, the fact that nature is the ultimate muse. I mean, it was certainly one of the precepts of the German Romantic movement, one of the reasons why I love this music so much and this part of the literature. And you feel it, and it is out there. There's nothing you can do against it anyway, whether you recognize it or not. And so, you know, one more reason to preserve it.
And nature and animals also tap into our ability or desire to communicate without words, just the way music does.
That's absolutely right. And to rely on the more intuitive part of our beings, which sometimes gets, you know, buried and obscured by the brouhaha of everyday life and this, you know, busy, productive multitasking that we are, you know, most of us are involved in on a regular basis. And that's actually, I think, quite damaging to who you truly are, who you could be, even in the best of cases, which is not always the same. Sometimes you have to work at it. And it gets in the way of all of that. And if you make space for relationships and presences in your life, being with music, with individuals with whom you do not need language to communicate, and that would be the case with animals, creatures, you do yourself a favor, simply said.
Is that what you meant? I read that you said that wolves could teach us humans something.
No, I don't know that they could teach us something other than living in harmony with their resources, which is something that we're really bad at doing. You know, it is an extended family unit. It's a cooperative social structure. So from that point of view, it's a species that has a lot in common with the early tribal cultures of humans. But at the same time, I think what I might have said is that if you try and interact with these animals, or if you are given the chance to have a relationship with some of them, as we all do in all facilities that deal with animals as ambassadors for their species, it teaches you humility, because you have to, you know, meet them on their terms. You can't expect them to meet you on yours. And that's another invaluable lesson, because when it comes to music, it's the same. You know, you need to be 100% in the moment of what you're doing, physically, emotionally, spiritually, intellectually, in your relationship to the piece, whether it's in your practice room or on stage. And that is... Yes, that's another parallel.
Because you have lots of interests beyond music, what does music itself mean to you? What part does it play in your life?
Well, it's the most important part. It remains the, you know, the principal presence in my life and motivation to get up in the morning. So, I mean, of course, the fact that I do have a lot of other interests, but frankly, I'm far from the only one. I mean, all of my colleagues do, and anybody I deal with on a daily basis, even if they're not colleagues. So, but of course, it does help to put things in perspective. And what it always brings me back to is how absolutely essential music is, and not only to me, I think also for us as a society, and as a proof of having reached a true level of civilization.
Thank you so much, Hélène Grimaud.
I thank you. Thank you for having me.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.